Hey folks, Captain Kevin Favor, and welcome to the Outdoor Show podcast brought to you by Ag South. They are specialists in land financing in Southeast Georgia. They make loans for small and large acreage, hunting property, timberland. They even do home mortgages and construction. Look, if you've listened to our show long enough, you know Jeff and I own property in Georgia. We both used Ag South for our financing, and they were great, and we couldn't be happier. Here's a cool part about Ag South. They have competitive rates, and they pay an average of 25% of the interest back every year in patronage. So let's just say your loan's for $300,000 at 6.5% at 20 years. That means you get back $2,770 a year. They write you a check for that. You call them at 844-AG-SOUTH or go to agsouthfc.com. Ag South, really good people who really know land.
Welcome to the Moe's Southwest Grill Fishing Forecast.
I'm going to take you fishing, honey. You're going to love it.
Brought to you by Ring Power, MyBookie, and Marine Max on 1010XL. Here's Captain Kevin Favor and Captain Scott Shank.
Good evening and welcome to the Moe's Southwest Grill Fishing Forecast. I am Captain Scott Shank. Captain Kevin is going to be away from us for a few weeks. He is busy making his circle of bow hunting up in Illinois and Indiana and Kentucky. So I'm joined with, of course, as usual, with Captain Chip Wingo tonight. Good evening, Chip.
How you doing, brother?
Doing great, doing great. God, what a gorgeous day today was, but we'll get into that here in a few minutes. Let's do this real quick. Let's throw out a forecast for the weekend. And it's a great weekend to hunt, maybe do some honeydews, enjoy a, you know, Veterans Weekend. You know, we do have that coming up on Monday. Tomorrow, Friday, north winds 20 to 25 knots, becoming north-northeast during the afternoon. Occasional gust to gale force. Seas 4 to 6, up to 8, and then is building to 11. 6 to 9 to an occasional 11. We're going to look at Saturday. Saturday is north-northeast winds, 20 knots. Seas 7 to 10 feet. Occasional sea up to 13. Sunday, northeast winds, 10 knots. Come backing off a little bit. Seas 3 to 5, but still up to 6. It's still going to be, it's still out. But what I see on Tuesday, which I don't remember the last time I saw this, it says southwest and west winds. But it's still going to be a little blowy, 15 knots. But anyhow, finally seeing some west winds. Anyhow, evening, Chip. Everything good with you?
Yeah, just I'm ready to go to the woods.
I understand.
So the weather is going to be like this. So.
Well, yeah, it's going to be a little nautical this weekend. But, God, what a gorgeous day today was. My gosh. I mean, the last couple of days, actually. I mean, it rained a little bit yesterday and stuff like that. We had little showers come through yesterday for us and stuff. But, my gosh, just today was just postcard, just
it was
beautiful
hot.
On the water.
It was hot.
Boy, I got up in a creek and stuff like that about 10:30, 11 o'clock, and man, it felt like it was, you know, August, you know, early September kind of thing. It was
stick
brutal.
Your hand in the water.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
Gotten nice.
Yeah. Water temperature, yeah, I had water temperature day of 75.5, pretty much on the ditch. I'll have to tell you, I only visited a creek one time and wasn't able really to find much in a creek today. Everything kind of happened on the main shoreline. Mm-hmm. Reds, trout, flounders, black drum are still around, but I think we had that little surge of them like 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Yep.
And I'm not saying we're not still catching a few, but it's definitely not what it was. You could still find them, but they have figured out the water temperature now, and they've kind of spread out a little bit more where we had that little downgrade of water temperature and stuff where they were holding themselves up in the creeks and the deeper holes and stuff like that. Not saying that you can't still catch a couple, but it's not like it was.
They're deep.
You know,
that's where we were finding them was deep.
Yeah, that, where I found them today was in 21, 22 feet of water today.
It's places that you'd never think about fishing.
No.
Most people would never think about fishing.
Nope.
You know, it's kind of funny that how we find those places.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and we're asked about that all the time. I mean, and that's what, you know, guys on today, you know, and just like yourself, you know, I kind of, my way of approaching everything, I ask these guys, well, you know, they go, well, what side of the bank are we casting on? I don't know. I said, what side is the boat sitting on?
Yeah, right.
That means we're going across the way. Well, why am I here? You know, I said, can y'all answer that? I mean, this is, I mean, you're going to
look at what the structure is or the depth.
Depth. You're watching current pull around a corner of a creek or something. You're watching how the current rolls around. It usually undercuts that bank somewhat. It makes it a little bit deeper. Mm-hmm. The other sides could be the shallower side. For the most part, down out of St. Augustine, most corners in the creeks are your deepest points, and that's where you're going to see most boats anchored up on or whatever, locked on the troll. You're going to be fishing that stuff. I mean, very few oyster beds on a straightaway are you really going to fish, to be totally honest with you. You know,
one of the ways I found one of my best drum holes was we were fishing the bank, and I was throwing a rod, and I was throwing it out of the back. The client was on the front, or the bow, not the front, the bow. So I throw out, and I noticed the trolling motor went off, so I just put it in the rod holder. Well, it blew me off the bank, and the trolling motor wasn't working properly because it had a weird connection on it.
Yeah.
So anyway, by the time I finally got it straightened out, that line had pulled all the way off to the bank and was in about 18 feet of water. And I finally got it working right, and I said, I'll just push this back up, and I turn around and look, and the rod's doubled over. And it was a big drum. It's like a 12-pound drum, and
hello.
Well, wait a second here. Let's try this. So, you know, and Leon's really good about finding those holes, too. And we both look around for stuff like that all the time. But, you know, I haven't gone back into a creek in a while. Mm. You know, and I don't particularly like fishing in the creeks.
I don't either.
You know, I can work 500 yards of bank line in, you know, 35 minutes or so and figure out if there's fish actually there or not.
Yep.
And, you know, I just like fishing that deeper water with clients, especially with clients who haven't fished a lot.
Right.
You know, they're not going to sight cast.
Right.
But they can throw it in a general direction and let it bounce.
The hardest thing, though, is training them what the bite's going to feel like, because I had that issue today where, you know, with this – folks, when we're fishing these deeper banks, there's usually some kind of coquina involved.
Mm-hmm.
There's oyster shells on the bottom. So when that jig head is going down that bank, because we position a boat to where myself, I usually have three or four people, I got to have it where they can fan cast and where that jig head naturally looks, the bait looks natural floating down the bank, okay? So usually, you know, you're going to tell them to throw it up there, and it might be 8 feet of water, 9 feet of water. But by the time they get into a certain drift position, your bite's going to occur 12, 15 feet of water.
20 feet,
and one of the spots today, when exactly what you said before with the drum, we were throwing, and actually I think I was netting a guy's trout, and I laid my rod just in the rod holder, and it basically made its way next to the boat. Well, all of a sudden, that rod just doubles over. Well, up comes a drum. And I went, okay. So I said, hold on one sec, guys. And I backed off into the intercoastal another 10 feet away.
Yeah,
so I'm guessing that fish was in about 18 feet of water. So I moved the boat to 21. And, you know, for the most part, I know casting to the bank does not mean anything. I'm asking you to cast towards the bank. But getting to the bank, I don't need you. There's a reason. This bank is, it's shallow, and then it drops off in stairs, and I'm going to put you, like I say, again, to where you're throwing up maybe in 6, 5, 6, 7 feet of water, but eventually through that drifting process, it's going to drift down into the strike zone area.
Yeah. Well, that's what I try to get my clients to do as well, and a lot of them get it. A lot of times, you know, I was telling you I was using the fish bites, the shrimp or the crab, the little squares.
Yep.
And putting those on the hook before the live shrimp, because a lot of times they're pecking at that shrimp, and sometimes you'll go through pinfish until it gets deeper, and, you know, you have a little piece of a tail left on it, but with that fish bite on there, when it hits that deeper water, they'll eat it.
Yep.
You know, but you're right on getting the bite. So I'll sit there and tap on the rod and go, okay, that's the bottom. And then, ba-boom, you know, you hit it a couple times, and then you pull on the line a little bit, and they go, that's a bite.
Or it's going to totally stop.
Or it's going to stop, or it's just going to try to yank the rod out of your hand. So,
But,
yeah, those fish are – it's amazing because in the last 2 weeks, I've fished all over the place, from way up towards Nassau Sound, you know, all the way down to Volano.
Yep.
And up the river. And it's so different.
Every day is different.
But it's so different in those areas, mm-hmm. the way you fish a lot mm-hmm. of times. But Sisters Creek, I target the same kind of thing we do down in the valley on the deeper rolls. And granted, when the tide's low, a lot of times they're last of the outgoing, first of the incoming. I can see redfish pushing down the bank.
Yep.
So I know, you know, those fish are easy to find. But then there's days where they don't push at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then the first thing I do when they're not pushing is go off the edge mm-hmm. and then start finding that 3-foot break, that 5-foot break,
yep.
and then down. And one day they might be at 3, the next day they might be at 15.
Great point. Let's just go this route with it, though. I've done this before.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, whether I, especially this time of year, Chip, we're trying to fish tides.
Mm-hmm.
We have to fish tides. We have to fish an outgoing, first of an income. You know, we're looking for that drum or that sheephead or whatever. We're not solely, the water's not cooled off enough yet that we can, one, either throw plastics or two,
yeah.
throw poppy corks up on a flooded, on somewhat of a flooded grass line, dealing with trout and redfish only,
mm-hmm.
okay? Maybe pick up an occasional flounder this time of year. With that being said, I will go out a lot, and just a great tip is go out on a dead high tide. Don't plan on fishing, but go and look at different banks that you see. I've seen on low tide.
Mm-hmm.
So, one, you're not disturbing your catch, because the worst thing you can do is
beat them up.
I mean, run them over with a motor or something on dead low tide of something that you wanted to fish and go, dang, I didn't know it was like this.
Yeah.
But if you go in there on that high tide and then exactly what you said, see where those steps and see how that bank looks, it at high or at low tide, it might have an oyster bed that's totally out of the water. Well, guess what? They're still underneath that water in 10, 11 feet of water. Through the years, the dead shell has broken off and has floated out and settled. So there's a, you know, there's a possibility to fish. And everybody looks at me because I have a 12-inch Simrad on my boat, and I got it split in fish finder and GPS. And people go, you got GPS marks on these spots? I said, yeah, they're in the middle of the river. Nobody knows.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's hard to just look at a bottom machine and figure it out, you know.
When you can pull right up on
the
mark.
When I can pull right up on, I mean, again, a tip. I mean, if you fish these spots, okay, and you did a little bit of homework, and you come back on that last hour of the tide, and well, bam, you catch a couple of reds or a drum or a trout. Hit the save button on it and name it whatever you want to name it or remember to whatever number it is. But I literally have probably a quarter of my GPS numbers are inshore numbers, and then. You know, then I have the remainder of the offshore. Anybody could pull up to a dock as soon as you know what that dock is and how, mm-hmm. again, how the stairs come down it. You don't need a GPS number. But there's a lot of these oyster beds that are out in the middle of the river.
You have to have them.
That you have to have
them. Because
you
and I have sat side by side, you know, within 20 yards of each other, and we're not getting the bite.
Uh-uh.
And you are.
Right.
But then I go ahead of you.
Right.
And I start getting the bite. And when I get a little piece of that bar, yeah, it's happened to Leon and I. It happens the same way in the river when we're bull red fishing,
yep.
too. You can be literally 15 feet to the left of me, and I'm catching fish or hooking them up one after another, and you're not getting any bites. You come over to the right of me, and you'll start catching them.
Yep.
Because it's that step. Again, you know. It's
6 inches. A foot makes all the difference. If mm-hmm. that fish can get below that current.
Absolutely.
Where it can still catch the bait as it washes through, but can kind of doesn't have to sit there and swim the entire time against the tide. I mean, he's trying to find, you know, just like we all do, we want an easy meal. We don't have to, you know, gosh, like the old days in the Indian, you had to run your meal down every night. That would stink.
Yeah, these fish are, they're lazy.
You know, I mean,
they get
just,
aggressive when they have to.
Well, I mean, your drum are lazy fish anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
Your sheephead are lazy fish. They just, they're the best way, and like I tell my clients, it's kind of like catching a catfish in fresh water. He is lazy. He's not going to run far from it, okay? And as the water cools, it's not going to get any better. It's going to get worse. Then we're really talking about dead sticking, which is hardly moving your bait at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to have to find, you know, that you'll have those little windows of opportunity. And you know, like today, you made a great point because I did the same thing. I had a piece of fish bites,
mm-hmm.
and it was me. and I put on a shrimp. Well, a pinfish ate half of my shrimp off. Okay? Well, I reeled it up and I threw it back out there to see where I was at. And I went, huh, well, I still got the fish, but I'll fish it. 31-inch red.
Mm-hmm.
Just a little piece of fish bites and a half a shrimp. But don't get excited to reel it up. I mean, that fish is still there. And, like, I mean, Chip's a big fan of fish bites. I've turned on to him now because of Chip. And it does make a big difference, just even for just having the scent in the water added to what that
And I'm not sponsored
does.
By him.
No,
either.
By no means are we. But no. it's a great product.
And that's the funny part, people are like, oh, you're sponsored. No,
no,
I'm not.
No,
I'm going to use whatever helps my clients catch fish.
Yeah, whatever makes me look like a hero.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it all looks about whether whatever you do end up putting in the box for dinner that night or what they were able to catch. Mm-hmm. If I can get any kind of little baby advantage on anything, I'm taking it.
Absolutely.
We're going to take a quick break right here on 1010XL. You're listening to the Moe's Southwest Grill Fishing Forecast. Captain Scott Schenck, Captain Chip Wingo. We'll be right back.
This is the Moe's Southwest Grill Fishing Forecast, brought to you by Ring Power, MyBookie, and MarineMax on 1010XL.
Welcome back to the Moe's Southwest Grill Fishing Forecast. Captain Scott Schenck, my good friend Captain Chip Wingo. Okay, Chip, on the beginning of this, we started off with the weather forecast, which looks a little nautical for the next 2 days.
Yeah, it does.
We'll go ahead. I'm going to do the tides out of St. Augustine, then you're going to do the tides out of Mayport. So, anyhow, whoever's fishing and wherever you want to go, you got them. Tomorrow, we got a high tide tomorrow morning at 5:31, with a low tide being 11:36 a.m., which is a 4.1, a 0.7, so you're not going to see too much, kind of like today. Saturday, high tides at 6:14 a.m., low tides at 12:30 p.m., and on Sunday, you're going to have a high tide at basically 7 o'clock in the morning, 6:56, and a low tide at 1:11 p.m. on Sunday afternoon.
Wow. Yeah, I don't think we're going to get much low tide at all out of this. So back to where we were just at. Tomorrow in Mayport, I'm actually going by the Pablo Creek entrance. You have a high tide at 5:57 a.m. It's only going to be a 4.13. And then your low tide's at 11:57, but it's only a 0.85. That's not a lot of movement as far as low tide. Probably be a good trout bite, though.
No, yeah.
If you can stand the wind and the weather.
Yeah.
But also, you know, on the Saturday, and we have a high tide at 6:41 a.m., which is only a 4.3. I think that's going to be a lot higher with that northeast wind blowing. But anyway, we have, you know, your low tide's at 12:43, and that's a 0.72 again.
Yeah.
And then Sunday, you know, 7:22, it's a 4.46. And at 1:26 p.m. in the afternoon, you've got a 0.62. I'd fish for trout.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
But
because you're not going to see that many oysters, just like we did today. It took forever. It just felt like it took forever to fall today.
Yeah.
And it sped up there a little bit for about the last hour and a half of it. It sped up on me. I could see that change. Where I did have to pull away from fishing the main shoreline and run into a creek and give it a half an hour, 40 minutes to kind of settle down a little bit. But with that being said, you're still going to catch, but like you said, it's a better trout bite, you know, to
I tell you what, it'll be really good though with that tide movement, believe it or not. I've done really well in that kind of tide for bull reds because there's not a huge push of tide.
Right, right.
And not a huge drop.
Right.
And they don't. It's like if you find them, they don't move that far. And they're not fighting a current that's usually that strong either. So that would be.
And that's what Kirk was talking about last Saturday when we did that, when I did the outdoor show with him on last Saturday. And they, Kirk was saying that he had to move around a little bit more last week, a little bit more than what the areas that he was catching them in, because they had shifted. And actually went up river farther north is what he was doing. I guess.
Wow. Well, it's funny because I fished, you know, I tagged all those fish.
Yeah.
I'm ready to go tag some more. But and they all came out of an area I don't fish very often. And actually, another captain that I work with occasionally turned me on. Well, Vic did, because we were talking about black drum, and he said, yeah, I went and fished one of my black drum holes and just wore the bull reds out on a quarter of a crab. Not a whole blue crab, but a quarter. So that tells me that they were on fire. So I went in there, of course, and they were there, you know, and I put out one whole crab, you know, and then I quartered them down, and I was catching fish on the quarter crab, and they didn't touch the other crab.
Okay.
But when I left that spot and went to another spot I have well upriver, and they wouldn't eat anything but that whole crab.
Now, Kirk was mentioning that they kind of came away from that deep water, and that he was catching like that 18 to 22 foot instead of the 35 to 40 foot.
Yeah, well, him and Leon were fishing one spot. That's the spot Leon had like 39 of them in less than 3 hours in a trip. But he said the current was screaming so hard, you know, that that 36 volt trolling motor on that Maverick was wide open.
Really?
You know, but he was using 10 ounces of weight and holding it there, and they were crushing it.
Wow.
So I guess it was flowing all that bait through the shallow water.
Yeah, it had to be. I mean, because
I've got a couple of those spots that are in less than 20, they're like 24 feet of water that are unbelievable for bull reds.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't even have to vent them. You bring them up, they're not blown
up.
Yeah,
that's true, that's true.
They're, you know, you bring them up, they're not blown up. You hold them off the side, and they swim right out of your hand, and they go. So
That's what makes a nice fishing in that little bit shallow river water where they're, you know, because even that one I caught today was in 21 foot of water. And I mean, it was on light tackle. So kind of fought him for a little while in that current, but I had to sit there and work with him to her.
That's what I love about catching black drums. They fight.
Down.
The black drum fights so hard compared to a redfish, you know, and even if it's a 17, 18 inch fish, it fights as hard as a 27, 29 inch red.
100%.
So, yeah, that bite was fun. And then we caught the pompano.
Yeah.
They started showing back up again.
And that's so funny because not like I've had a chance to fish our inlet or anything lately with us. I mean, gosh, this wind has just been relentless. But a couple of the spots and stuff like that that I had caught them on before and stuff like that around some docks around downtown St. Augustine, I've been trying it because the water finally cleared up. It's not that muddy look anymore.
The catfish go away finally?
No, no, they're still chewing. No, I've caught my fair share of those. But the water is starting to clear up and stuff like that. So, but what's so funny is, just like you, I carry every bit of two different baits, if not three different baits with me here on out. Sheephead are starting to show up, just like they have showed up. I've heard in Mayport, the boys have been catching them. That target them pretty darn good. We're starting to see them. I mean, I caught one today, but I will start carrying, you know, a half a cup of Fiddlers, or I'll just carry a little bit. You know, I got a little one of the little $2 little bait containers or whatever you call them with the red top lid ones or whatever. Where, God forbid, if it blows over, I'm not chasing Fiddlers all across the
bottom
of my boat.
That's why I use the Maxwell House coffee can.
The plastic one. No,
so,
I get it.
And you can take two 10-ounce weights, you know, your regular weights, stick them inside. But I drill holes in the bottom of it, too, so that you can, you know, because you clean them out every once in a while. You stick them in the water and shake them a little bit.
Yep.
But, you know, we were talking about deep water fishing a little while ago. And one of the best people I know that does it is Captain David Borries. And he does it. They don't cast. They drop straight down. And he sets up a controlled drift with his trolling motor. And I've watched him do it over and over and over and over again on day, especially in the summertime when we're struggling to catch good fish. And he's just wearing it out.
Really?
And that's what he does. He pretty much, you know, I started playing around with it too. On my spot lock trolling motor, you can point the trolling motor into the current.
You can hold your due north. You can hit due north on a trolling motor.
So hold it into the current.
Yep.
Then hit the directional. On mine, I have a directional, which will just keep it there. Not spot lock, but a directional.
Yep.
And then I will slowly turn down the speed until the boat barely starts slipping backwards. And then, because I was watching him do it, and I tried it on a couple spots, and that helped me find the fish.
Okay.
So I covered about 400 yards bank line in a spot that Leon and I fish all the time. And I did it up north, too. So you could do that control drift, and it basically keeps the line straight up and down.
Yep.
So your client, a lot of times I'll tell them, I'm like, hit the bottom, you know, let it hit the bottom, close the bail, and then just lift the rod tip up just a little bit. And then that way it's not on the bottom, and every once in a while it'll hit something on the bottom. But it's just like that control drift going down the bank.
I never thought of that.
Yeah, and it works.
Because I move, because then if I don't get a, like you're just saying, mm-hmm. if I, three to four guys, if they fan cast and they make five casts apiece,
yeah,
automatically there ain't nothing here. I should have got bit by something. Somebody's going to make the right drift, and I should have got a bite. So then I'll come off of it, I'll slide back 50, 60, 70 feet, do it again, and I'll work that way.
Well, you know, with that also, you can also cover different. You have one guy on one side of the boat, one guy mm-hmm. on the other. Mm-hmm. And if the guy on the right-hand side of the boat, if you're facing, you know, the deeper water is on the right, if he starts doing it, then I'm going to go out.
Yeah.
Like you said, I'm going to hit spot lock, and then I'm going to bump it out like 10 feet and yep. then start fishing those areas. But it's so funny because that trolling – there's so many things you can use as trolling motors where the people don't even.
And I'm not that good. I'm not a computer whiz by any
means. And it's not being a computer whiz. It's
no,
just
I know. It's just following figuring it out
how it works, because I use it all the time when I'm creeping down bank lines, throwing the spinner baits with clients for flounder, and I'll hit the directional on the head because I can look straight down the bank and figure out what the wind's doing, and then keep it off the yep. bank enough. And then when we catch one, I'll spot lock down, then we'll throw at that spot. You know, when we fish the tournament, that spot that I took you to, I mean, I said, there's going to be a big fish here. And, you know, my client cast up there and he didn't get one at all. I threw up there and I caught a 2-pounder. And I said, there's a bigger fish here than this.
That picture came up on Facebook
last week.
That's 3 years ago that we did that together.
Right? And there's that spot. Holds some of the biggest flounder I've caught in the Intracoastal Waterway.
Really?
Don't know why, but we lost two other fish there that were a lot bigger than the 5-pounder that he caught on the very next cast when he threw up to the same spot again. But we caught two bigger ones that were about 8 to 10 yards down the bank from that spot that came off right of the boat that I was like dropping to my knees going, no!
Yeah,
and it
yeah.
wasn't anybody's fault. They just came unbuttoned.
Yeah. yeah.
But, you know, but those trolling motors, I swear by them. I mean,
no. Well, Captain Zach Timmons is a lot younger, and he's kind of that computer guy. He knows what's going on. And this is a few years ago, 4, 5, 6 years ago. Anyhow, I did not know that you could GPS sync those things.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, dude, you're fishing this same piece of bottom, and some of it, like you said, I'll bring it all the way down on low and just, you know, basically have it just inching along with the tide with them
yeah,
fan casting
the
to the bank.
With the tide, yeah.
But I'm going against the tide. I'm not mm-hmm. going, you know, I'm not dropping backwards. Anyhow, he said, dude, you could program this thing. You see that? There's a reason it says start and end on that thing. And I said, really? He said, yeah, watch this. And you hit start, whatever. Like I said, a day when you're out just riding around with the wife, but this is a spot that you fish all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Go up there and hit start and just motor on through it. And then whenever you get to the end of that piece, you hit end and it saves it into your GPS. And then whenever you go there, you just hit it and it knows exactly how to take you right down the line.
Yeah.
So, because that was the biggest thing when you'd only have, especially when you're either one by yourself or two, it takes away from that stupid thing being around your neck, getting in the way from a hook set or reeling as you reel the lanyard into your reel hand. I mean, been there and done that. you know, risk it falling over or something like, you know, you're losing your remote or whatever. But then you can just throw it on the dash. You're done. It'll. You might have to adjust your speed
yeah.
every single time because it'll be a different way at time maybe that you're in there. But for the most part, all you're doing is adjusting your speed. The direction's already there. You just got to hit that waypoint, and it follows it right on through.
Well, it's funny because the more I play around with those things, and now I'm going to a 36 volt.
You're
gonna
love it.
Yeah, and thanks to Matt out at Control Motor Services Plus, that guy's incredible. I'm putting a helix, the Hummingbird helix sides.
Yeah. Are you?
Yeah. Well, I have a GPS unit on my dash. Okay, so now I have the RAM mount.
Yep.
and I'm putting the Helix with a side scan on it so that I can spin it around. So when I'm looking for a spot, I can turn and look and get them right on it. But I want it for looking down the edges of those bank lines we fish.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've gone out on two people's boats now that have them, and we pulled up to docks, and you can see suspended fish under them. Then you go to the next dock, there's nothing.
Nothing.
And he's like, you know, you don't believe it? Throw it to the dock where we just saw fish. You'll catch them. Go to the next dock. You won't catch anything.
Right.
But, and I want it for a couple different things. There's some areas that I like. I've got a couple spots I like to fish that are really strange, and I want to see what the bottom looks like. And then I want to also be able to see the fish on the ledges a little bit better in some of the deeper water spots I fish.
Okay.
So
we got to take a quick break.
Yep.
We'll come back. We'll go back on that because I do want anyhow. Yes, I've added that to my arsenal as well too. Folks, you're listening to the Fishing Forecast here on 1010XL. If you'd like to call in and chime in and say hello, give us a shout. 641-1010. That's 641-1010. We'll be right back.
She's been playing at a room on the strip for 10 years in Vegas.
You're listening to the Moe's Southwest Grill Fishing Forecast, brought to you by Ring Power, MyBookie, and Marine Max on 1010XL.
Well, I'm a chicken fried. Welcome back to the Moe's Southwest Grill Fishing Forecast. Again, Captain Scott Shank, Captain Chip Wingo. And before when we went on break, we were talking about the new, well, not really new, everything's had it, but how side scan and all that kind of stuff is kind of playing somewhat of a role in what we do. It's not so much of helping you on the offshore fishing scene, looking inside of reefs or wrecks or knowing how fish. Basically, it's helping you know where they're staging at,
mm-hmm.
whether it's in a tide situation, in a undercut bank, tree line kind of situation, up current, down current, you know, whatever.
Well, the bass guys that fish the St. John's River, they proved it to me for a fact.
Mm-hmm.
Because that they'll pull out onto an area, a bar out there, and they look for the bass.
Yep.
They see them, they'll stay. If not, they run to another spot.
Yeah.
And those are all tournament guys.
Yeah. Because, so, I mean, you think about that, and especially on a lake, I'm not overly familiar, but I can just tell you by watching enough shows. I mean, they're looking for gravel bars. They're looking for
submerged points.
They're looking for, what do they call them, fence line rows or what, or old red boat road beds or something that's called or whatever.
Yeah, on those flooded lakes.
You know, and so, you know, all that is just the technology, as we talked about before, with the trolling motors has advanced so much.
Yeah.
Now you're getting, it's been around for a few years now. It's not something that's brand new, but Hummingbird has it. Simrad has it, of course. I mean, pretty much everybody has got it nowadays. It's just the biggest thing is how your equipment pairs to one another.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be through your trolling motor, through the unit itself, and or just unit to unit.
Yeah, I don't have mine paired. I use a bunch of different stuff.
That's what I mean. I don't have.
I'm going to have two GPSs and two depth recorders on my boat.
Right.
But now I don't. With my boat now, I have to shoot the temperature with the laser.
Okay.
Because I have the through hole fitting on my boat. The way mine's set up, they embedded in the through hole,
mm-hmm.
not through the hole, but on the hole in a glass.
Right.
So that's why I want to put this other system on and have it with an actual, you know, puck in the water.
Right.
So I can get an accurate temperature reading.
Right.
So we'll see what happens. I mean, it's, you know, and then going with the 36-volt trolling motor is going to be just incredible.
I know.
So, and my boat's heavy. You know, yeah. Leon's is light, but.
Well, it's everybody makes that question, myself, and I know. Whenever you are building your own boat, let's just say, or whenever you're out looking around, okay,
mm-hmm.
for your next boat purchase or whatever, there's a reason the Coast Guard puts those Coast Guard stickers on your boat, and it tells you max horsepower of 300. Will the boat run with a 200 on the back of it? Mm-hmm. It sure will, but what is going to be in your worst interest is you're going to notice it every time you pull up to the gas station every day to put fuel in it because you got, you know, four grown men in a boat, and you have 200 horsepower, and that engine is straining all day long by you having run a higher RPM to be on plane or whatever. Mm-hmm. I run a 300. My boat's maxed out for a 300. I had a 250 on a 24 Viper, and it did perfectly fine. But there's two things that I look at it. Of course, you can always work yourself with different pitches of props and all that kind of stuff. Well, most of the time for me is a weight factor. I'm carrying 4 or 5 people.
Yeah.
I don't need a speed prop. I don't need to go anywhere 70 miles an hour, so I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about a thrust prop, you know, a thrust or just a I don't care how fast I get out of the hole. It's overall, it's just performance of a weight situation than it is of how fast I can go down the river, you know. Yeah. And we always talk about it. I run between like 3,700 and 4,200 pretty much. And cruise speed is running me between like 28 and 32 miles an hour with 5 guys and 89 gallons of fuel.
Down, yeah.
You know?
Well, you know, on the trolling motors, I have that quick release on my trolling motor. Mm-hmm. The quick release as in the prop. It's a cone nut that goes on.
Yep.
And I have a plastic prop that I use when I'm shallow water fishing. And then I have the aluminum prop that they make for the motor guide that the Bass Pros buy them, and they sharpen them. So,
oh, really?
So when they're going through weeds, it cuts through
them,
I guess.
Okay.
But that thing in the river, in deep water, it's quieter, and
the metal prop is.
Yeah, the aluminum prop
aluminum
is.
Prop.
It doesn't have any flex.
Oh.
So I think it bites better in the heavy current.
Doesn't chatter in that current and stuff
and
like that.
And it works really good. However, you don't go bull red fishing and decide to jump up into the creeks, because I do some four-wheel driving occasionally with the trolling motor. Not purposely, but it happens. And I made that mistake
that
and
thing.
Broke one of the shafts on it.
Yep.
But,
yep.
You know, we were talking about all the different technologies and that we have now to fish with. And it's still funny because we'll see the guys in the stump knockers just wearing them out.
Hey, I got to tell you this. I went into Capo Creek in St. Augustine, right down the road from you, and I just looked at that dude, and it was just like, damn, that was me, like back when I was 17, 18 years old. Here he is. Great boats. It's called Cracker Boat Works. It's basically a stump knocker, and they're built out of St. Augustine by a good friend of mine, Jimbo. And he was sitting there with the old-fashioned balsa float.
Yeah.
You know, level on reel kind of thing, the old pen 920s and 940s. And I'm going, damn, I remember doing that, right?
Still the best way to catch
there's
trout.
There's no doubt
period.
In my mind. No doubt in my mind.
Yeah,
that slip
that
float.
That long sinker.
Fishing 2 or 3 foot leader on it or whatever, a 1 ounce lead, 3/4 ounce lead, you know, and a regular old balsa slip float. The way that they make them now is totally different than they had them before, where that lead attached to the float itself does not do a dang bit of good for you. Mm-hmm. As soon as you buy one of those floats, first thing you do is grab a pair of crescent pliers and pull that piece of lead off because it's not doing a dang bit of good.
Yeah, they want it just so it turns it up.
That's it. Just enough when he – and, man, I was just watching him, and it just brought so many memories back of how that
Remember
was it.
Remember how fast you'd have to reel
just
to
reel,
catch
reel,
up
reel.
To it?
And they did make high-speed reels back, you know, like they do now. Because, I mean, the sweetest reel to fish them at that time was either, which they still make, the Abu Garcia 5500s. Mm-hmm. And that one had a clicker set up on it. Yeah. So if you're doing something else or
– throwing the slip sink or the Carolina rig with a mullet on, you just
threw
put it in the back of the boat.
Free spool and put the clicker on. And that way you can still slip float. And then the Penn 920s, 940s, which, I mean
– they were slow as dirt.
They were slow. Oh, my God.
Great
flounder reels, but they could not – I would burn so many paws up and pinning gears, pitching, trying to wind so fast on those floats to catch up to them. But it was just – God, I watched him when I rode by him, and I just sat there, and I was kind of looking at him the whole time. He's looking back at me like, man, what's this dude trying to steal?
What's this guy's
I'm not
problem?
Trying to steal your spot, but it was just like – I was just, you know, watching him now. He just – you know, lifted the rod up, pulled out 6 more feet of line, the float would go bouncing down, and all of a sudden, anyhow, it was just, I just have not, the invention of the, again, Cajun Thunders or Cajun, you know, Thunder Chickens or whatever. We're just so
Pro
used
poppers,
now.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're just so used
It's so funny how people on their popping corks get so dialed into one particular one. And the ones I'm using now with the shrink wrap on the wire and everything else, you never catch the line on them. You know, Rob makes those, and they're my favorites. Plus, in the wind, like, you can throw them a mile in the wind. But, you know, it's funny. We were talking about pompano. I had the popping corks on, and I've been using the this is going to sound weird, but I take the mini brainer, weighted circle hook, hook it through the nose of the Fish Bites Dirty Boxer White Curly Tail. So it's just like you're hooking a mullet on or a mud minnow. And we're using those popping corks, and we caught the biggest pompano I've ever had on the boat, which was 4.5 pounds.
Wow.
And we caught two of them in a row that way on the popping cork with an artificial. Mm-hmm. And I'm like going, first I thought it was a jack.
Yep.
Because that made sense.
You saw the flash. You go, okay.
So I saw, bam. Yep. I mean, it hit it and took off with it, and it's fighting really hard. And I'm like, oh, jack. And then it came out rolled. So I was like, oh. I was like, don't get in the prop. Don't get in the prop. You know how they'll take you right into the back of the boat, and the rod tip goes under the water. So we got that one in and caught another one. And then we were all using, well, I had one guy using those. And then everybody else wanted to start using them, because they were catching all the fish on them. But that's when I kept, that's the first charter I ever kept the bonnet heads for, and the bigger ones we caught. And they called me back ranting and raving about them. So, and they're so easy to clean, Scott.
Oh, I know.
And they're just such beautiful meat. But, you know, it was funny putting that pompano meat down next to the black drum, next to the sheep head, next to the redfish and the bonnet head. How dark it is. Mm-hmm. Some people don't like it, and I like all of them. You don't eat much fish.
I don't
fish,
eat fish. No.
Nothing wrong with that. So.
No, I mean, and everybody says, "Man, you're so lucky you get to eat." And I'm sorry, but I mean, kind of like the wife and the kids and all that kind of stuff. Kind of spoiled, and we. I just, if I had a day off from offshore fishing, I went flounder fishing, and that's just,
yeah,
that's my number one fish go-to. All right, we got to take our last and final break. When we come back, we'll talk about what's going on. We'll talk about this weekend, and all of you guys, you got to get registered. We're going to talk about that when we get right back. Listen to the Mo Southwest Grill Fishing Forecast. Captain Scott Shank, Captain Chip Wingo. Be right back.
Red. The Moe's Southwest Grill Fishing Forecast, brought to you by Ring Power, My Bookie, and Marine Max on 1010XL.
Welcome back to the Moe's Southwest Grill Fishing Forecast. Captain Scott Shank, Captain Chip Wingo. We only got a couple minutes left. So anyhow, a few announcements coming on. Folks, if you're listening to this, you need to go to the Outdoor Show Facebook page and register for the Christmas party. This year, the Christmas party is going to be December the 7th. Again, it's going to be at Ring Power, which is right there off of International Golf Parkway, which you'll, if you remember, it's a great, great location that they have us set up for. But it is going to be December 7th, so you need to go ahead and register. Don't forget to write down the ages of the kids and stuff. Charters will be given away. I know myself. I know Chip. I know Leon. I know Kevin.
If you've got kids, you have to bring
them. We all donate to the kids. So anyhow, get on there and get that started, because I just looked at my phone and it said today's November the 7th. So registration is going to be closing in 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks. Registration could be closing, which I can't believe it's almost December already.
Yeah, it's going
by. But anyhow,
quick.
It's going by quick. So don't forget to register for that. Tune in this Saturday, however you want to call it. Fortunately, unfortunately, Kevin and Jeff are both going to be out. They're doing R&D for the outdoor show. So Captain Kirk Waltz and myself will be filling in and standing in for the boys as they're out of town doing some hunting. So tune in on Saturday mornings from 7 to 10. Or the outdoor show. For myself, for Captain Chip Wingo, for Country bringing it to us tonight. Thank you again, Country. I do appreciate it. Folks, be careful this weekend. It's going to be a little nasty. Definitely going to be nasty tomorrow with gusts up to 35 knots, gale force, as well as leading into Saturday. Sunday, though, outside of a little bit of wind, it's going to be fishable. Maybe not offshore, but it will be fishable in the river. Fish are biting. Take the time. Take a kid fishing. Captain Chip Wingo, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Appreciate it.
Always.
I think I'm going to have Captain Leon Dana step in because I think you're going to do R&D next Thursday.
Yes, I have one on my hit
you
list.
I've just seen the hit list. Okay. So Chip's going to leave me, and then I'm going to bring in Leon next weekend. So that way him and I can have a day with us.
I think it'd be much more entertaining if Kathy was doing the show.
Well, I know. I brought my thanks to my wife for driving up here with me tonight. But anyhow, keeps me awake.
You're better.
Ready to fall asleep. Folks, appreciate you. Thank you a lot for listening to the Moe's Southwest Grill Fishing Forecast. Have a safe weekend. See ya.
See ya.